8:36 on the Jefferson Exchange on the News and Information Service of Jefferson Public Radio. We'll go directly into our monthly media segment, Signals and Noise. One thing we've noticed about running a monthly media segment in 2018 is that the topics do indeed come fast and furious. We can try to decide on topics a few days, sometimes even weeks in advance, but the onslaught of news, the continual dump truck of things coming out, frequently shuffles our deck right up to the last minute. Pardon the mixed metaphor. That's okay. Always plenty to talk about. We do define media very broadly. We take items about the media themselves and content delivered over a broad range of media, from virtual reality to books. Our regular guests are here from the communication faculty at Southern Oregon University. Precious Yamaguchi on my left, your right, and Andrew Gay on my right, your left.
Good morning.
Good to be here.
As if we were on a stage. I know people are looking like that. Yeah, you do have a control of your own over your own headphones there, Precious. I can see you're looking for the, everybody's pushing the buttons in the new studio. This is fun. So let's talk about media generally, because we'd been talking a couple of times in the past about the possibility of a merger between Tribune Broadcasting and the Sinclair Broadcast Group, which would result in one gigantic group of TV stations that had the ability to reach 72% of the country's population, mm-hmm. where the current cap is somewhere south of 40%. I mean, just south of 40%. And it looked like this thing was going to go ahead with just a few divestitures, but still a higher ownership cap. And then all of a sudden, Ajit Pai, the chair of the FCC, seemed to turn around and say, let's do this a different way.
Which is kind of surprising and encouraging, I think.
I'm still trying to figure out what the motive was. But what he wants a judge to review this, right? He wants a judge to look at the legality of this?
That's my understanding.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I guess he wasn't seeing enough benefits for the merger to happen. But I was also surprised, too. It seemed like all these different type of mergers were happening and that the administration and different people were very supportive of it. So I was surprised.
Yeah, and let's go to a general concept here then. I mean, in an age when people do have so many media choices, does it matter as much that a group of television stations, and we're talking about local television stations with local news operations, mm-hmm. including KTVL in Medford, for example, whether it's really that important that one company owns so many different outlets when people do have other options for where to go for their news?
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, there's, of course, the practical aspect that we're talking about jobs, right? Whenever you have these kinds of mergers, I know, for instance, I see a lot of talk around the Disney Fox merger, right? A lot of fans are excited because they're like, oh, you know, X-Men are going to come to the Marvel Cinematic Universe. And a lot of industry insiders are saying, you know, do you realize how many thousands of jobs are going to be lost because of this merger? So I think that's one real practical aspect, is that it's a lot more people in the media who are going to be unemployed. And I think it means, you know, consolidating where these stories come from, right? You know, we already see a lot of this in local news media, where really a lot of it's these story packages that come that are shared across stations, and there's fewer local studios, and so I think that's more of that would happen.
And then also, I feel that a lot of times people are very invested in their community, and it helps when media outlets are also very invested and are the voices of the community. And so I think it becomes more popular that we see different type of news feed or email groups that are neighborhood voices and narratives happening, because there is that more massive type of media going on that might not have that huge amount of interest in very local type of issues and stories.
You have hit the nail on the head and got a great way to go into the next discussion, which is about the uses of community-sourced information, because on Thursday night a week ago, when the car fire was clearly rolling into Reading and things were getting ugly, it was hard to keep track of what was going on, because the traditional media have a little trouble keeping up to date. I mean, the broadcast media can do fine, but I didn't want to sit there and watch one TV station. And so I was just trying to keep track of what was going on and put up hashtag car fire into Twitter and could watch. And we were getting, oh, wow, probably a dozen at least new tweets a minute with that hashtag on it. And it wasn't like I could really get a picture of the whole situation, but it was sort of like the flashes of lightning that let you see what the landscape is like, that you can get a sense of what's going on. And it was clear just how awful that situation was. But certainly some value there in not just having the information in the hands of the people who purport to be just the deliverers of information.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and you know, one of the things about sort of Twitter news, right, is that the way, you know, between you're relying both on Twitter algorithms and on, you know, the source, you know, whoever is actually delivering this information, and a lot of times they're repeating information that they heard. And so there's a lot of conflicting information or sometimes out-of-date information depending on how you're looking at your Twitter feed. You know, I saw, you know, when I believe it was a bulldozer driver and the fire inspector, both passed away in that. But there are multiple times where those stories kept changing. I saw, where they said, no, it was two firemen, and no, it was someone else, or no, there's actually only been one death. So you see people are confusing what the narrative is in certain ways with that sort of action hashtag news. The interesting thing I saw too is that I followed both the Klamathon fire hashtag and then the car fire hashtag. I saw the car fire hashtag got a little more political. I saw a lot more people arguing about politics in that hashtag than I ever saw in the Klamathon fire. I thought that was interesting.
I wondered about the trolling on that myself, Andrew, because mm-hmm. I did notice early in the game it seemed like, well, this is really sad that this is happening to Reading and the national media aren't covering it. Well, I checked the national media. The national media were all over it. And in fact, the other shoe there is that the national media aren't covering this because they're so busy bashing Trump.
Right. Mm-hmm. I saw a lot of tweets about that.
Yep. Right. Well, I figured I'd check out Fox News to see what was going on there. And Fox News didn't have the story as high, but they were bashing Obama at the time. So that gives you an idea of what their perspective is.
Yeah. One thing that I think could be really interesting with the use of these different hashtags for the car fire and the Klamathon is that because Twitter, you have all these different hashtags. So there's when there's disaster communication, there's three different stages. There's a disaster pre-preparation, the response stage, and then the post disaster. I feel that with Twitter, we can use all this type of data to look at the post disaster communication and how does Twitter, all these different tweets, how many of them are actually very effective? How many of them are just kind of trolling? And so I don't know if it's for students or a researcher, if they did want to do some kind of analysis, that Twitter gives you that type of data to use, too.
This is our Signals and Noise, our monthly media segment on the Jefferson Exchange with Precious Yamaguchi and Andrew Gay from the Communication Faculty at Southern Oregon University. Jump into the conversation, bring up your media topics, or talk about the ones we're already talking about. We have lots more to talk about. 800-838-3760 to join the conversation by phone. You can also send emails to jx@jeffnet.org. And I'll make sure I check that email box now. So back to one of the reasons I actually went to check out the Twitter feed to see what was going on in Reading was because the official information couldn't keep up. Things were just clearly moving too fast. And I was able to see from people on Twitter about the fact that the fire, for example, had jumped the Sacramento River on the north side of Reading hours before anybody could get the official information. And I totally get the reason for that people in emergency services were trying to save lives at that point. And in fact, Jeremy Stokes, the fire inspector from the city of Reading, was attempting to help people evacuate when he died, as I understand it. So it's not like, but this is the thing, is when official sources of information can't keep up with the events, it's interesting to see that social media can, even though I'm told, too, that because there are power outages and internet outages in Reading, some people just didn't have access at that time either.
Yeah, I didn't see it myself, but I saw several people talking about how the local news there, one of the stations, literally evacuated while on the air. Right?
KRCR, yeah.
So, I mean, it's pretty incredible when you see that kind of thing happening, and it's scary. And so I think, we rely on the resources we have, and certainly if something were happening here in Ashland where I live, I would be looking at Twitter for information as well. But obviously it's always helpful when we have a number of media outlets and get to look at, official news and community resources and Twitter. I think they all help each other.
And honestly, as a news organization, it makes for some decisions that we have to think about making down the road. I mean, are we part of this, or do we cede some of the landscape because we think that Twitter will keep up or that people will get the evacuation announcements on their cell phones and therefore we don't have to go street by street? So, there are decisions that us old media types have to make as well in this landscape.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, I used to work in human resources and for like a big organization. And one of the things that they really encourage in human resources is to update your emergency plans every single year. And I don't think a lot of organizations do that. It's because a year passes by really, really quickly. But I think that living in Southern Oregon, we do have, like whatever organization we're in, we do have to figure out, well, what are our inter-organizational preparation tasks we need, as well as like intra within the organization too. So it's something that we just have to prepare for, I think, living in Southern Oregon. But it is a year-to-year thing because of Twitter and all the different type of technology that's always being updated. Like, how do we use it to our benefit, and also how do we use it in an organized type of manner?
Yeah, because it was pointed out back to me that, you know, some people were thinking, well, we'll get an alert. You know, we'll get an alert on our smartphones. But then when the internet service is out, then that can't happen
right.
either. So then,
and these fires move very quickly. I mean, you know, that one was raging, and you know, I think they couldn't even you know, necessarily promise to get the, you know, the 1, 2, and 3. It was like, oh, no, you're 3 now.
Right.
You go.
Yeah. Yeah. That fast. Signals and Noise here on the Jefferson Exchange, our monthly media visit with Andrew Gay and Precious Yamaguchi from Southern Oregon University's communication faculty. You can join in at 800-838-3760 and jx@jeffnet.org. I guess we should talk about enemy of the people again, because it never seems to go completely away, but they're the traditional media being labeled enemy of the people by the White House. And there are several different fingers of this time. There was the revelation last weekend by the publisher of the New York Times that he had met with Donald Trump and urged him not to say things like enemy of the people. And then they ended up in a little Twitter spat of their own, followed by a crowd in Tampa yelling obscenities at Jim Acosta, who's the CNN White House reporter, followed by Jim Acosta blaming Sean Hannity on Twitter, followed by Sarah Sanders at the White House refusing to say that reporters are not the enemy of the people, although then Ivanka Trump subsequently said, no, they're not. You got that all?
The ironic thing, going even further back into history, is this type of phrase, it's not new. There was actually a play in 1882 by a Norwegian playwright.
Henrik Ibsen.
Yes. And it was about the hypocrisy of Victorian morals and culture. So I thought that was interesting that it's now in 2018 that phrase is being used again.
Yeah, especially for people who are working and trying to deliver information.
Well, I think it was truly remarkable. I mean, nothing is surprising anymore, I think, when the president says these kinds of things, but I think it's still I still find myself astonished when the press secretary can't even say, no, the press is not the enemy of the people. You know, I think, you know, for a press secretary, it was a very easy opportunity to be like, oh, you know, the president blows off steam, but obviously he doesn't mean that literally. You know, no attempt at all to tamp that down and said, no, well, you know, I'm, the president has made his opinion clear and list off all the problems that she has with the media, but does not say that it's not the enemy of the people, which is very disturbing to me.
Yeah, it's an interesting moment in history. Let's move on to lighter fare here, if it could be called lighter, because it's a business thing that is not good for the business. Movie Pass, which was selling unlimited visits to the movie for, what was it, $9?
Yeah, I think we need to play taps here. For Movie Pass was one of my pick three not that long ago. It was this, everyone, I was an evangelist for Movie Pass, and I kept on saying, you know, I don't understand it, because it's essentially a money tree. It is a money tree. You pay about $10 a month and you get endless movies. Like, obviously this is not going to last, but I'm going to take it while I can get it. And I think, you know, that it's still kind of sort of kicking, but it had a very bad week this week. And you know, they've never had a business model. They've run out of cash again and again and again. And this weekend it got to the point where they blocked out pretty much every single movie that you couldn't see anything.
Well, they were talking about surge pricing too for movies like at 10:50.
Well, they introduced surge pricing a little while ago, and then then all of a sudden, like, I was going to go see a movie over the weekend, and I looked up, and the surge pricing, like, at our art house theater, the Varsity Theater, for a morning matinee on a weekend had surge pricing. I said, you know, this is not this system's not working anymore. And I think it's a shame, because I think the good thing about Movie Pass, of course, is that it got a lot more people going to movies. You know, the theater business has been going down. People don't like the prices that they have to pay to have the theatrical experience. So Movie Pass got people back into theaters, but you know, what's next? I mean, I think it introduced a new business model, and maybe someone else can come along and make it work.
I did notice a competitor, Adam Tickets, announced a breakup with MoviePass sweepstakes, offering MoviePass customers a chance to win a year's worth of free Adam tickets if they cancel their MoviePass account.
Mm-hmm. Oh, did you receive any kind of email or anything letting you know about
Yes, I mean, I got an email. Like, it was late. I mean, the company is. I would say that leadership has been somewhat incompetent throughout this problem. Like, I've saw a lot of great GIFs and tweets and memes about this. But they after I think more than 24 hours of not working, they sent out a message that basically said, "Yeah, we're no longer going to let you see any opening day movies. We're raising our prices," and so basically, kind of telling their customer, like, everything you loved about MoviePass is going to be going away, but still stay with us, right? So you got to feel for them in some ways because obviously their business and they have to find a way to make it work, but they kind of promised rainbows and kittens, and now they're taking the rainbows and kittens away. And so,
No, and I noticed too that their stock price just crashed. Mm-hmm. They're down around 50 cents a couple of days ago. Not good. And it sounds like they really did kind of make their own bed in some ways, like assuming that they would get a cut of the concession revenue at the theaters, which, as I understand it, is like asking for the firstborn.
Right, and actually, that letter was really absurd because they blamed their there was a line in there somewhere where they kind of partially blamed their failure on the fact that concessions are too expensive, and that's why people don't want to. It's like there's so much blame shifting. It's like, obviously, no, this is your leadership problem.
All right, well, let's move from the movie seats to the movie screen and the issue with the firing of James Gunn, the director of the Guardians of the Galaxy movies. And here again, we come back to social media because it was tweets that did him in from nearly a decade ago by his account.
But I think the interesting thing there was that these were not secret tweets. These are tweets that had actually already come out a while ago, and there had already been something of a reckoning. I mean, there had been...
So they were there, in other words, for the first two Guardians of the Galaxy movies.
Yeah, and I think with creativity and creative positions, there's certain amounts of provocativeness that audiences allow, but then also there's that other part of the audience or people that might not like it as well. So, I mean, when I think about so many different directors and actors and musicians and artists, if we look at all of the things that a lot of the people have said throughout history, there's a lot of offensive things and things that could range from offensive to provocative. So it depends on, I think, what certain people are looking for, or if someone is trying to... They don't like that person. Those things can arise from like years or even decades ago.
But for example, then, I mean, is it kind of a you got to? Like, I mean, if you've now fired Roseanne because of her offensive tweet, do you then have to fire James Gunn because of his offensive tweet?
Right,
even though it was years ago.
I think the interesting thing there, right, is that both of these people, by the way, had a record of offensive tweets. Roseanne, Disney knew who they were getting. So I mean, that was part of the thing about the Roseanne firing was that there was this absurdity of like, oh, no, we were so surprised that Roseanne had these views. I mean, no, they were all there on Twitter. And the same thing with James Gunn. And so you have two people who had a history of tweets, but one continued the behavior and did this while under contract, and another, these tweets were dug up by conservative media to target him because he had been standing up for sort of social justice type issues. And so the thing, again, is fascinating to me is that James Gunn had published an apology already for this a while ago. And, you know, whether or not you think he should have been hired for Guardians of the Galaxy, I think there's something disingenuous about saying, oh, this person, this reckoning already happened, and we've made two movies with him. Oh, but now because people are in bad faith complaining about it, we're going to fire him. And so I think that's part of the fascinating kind of situation there is at what point has someone paid for the sins of something that happened already.
Right. And it's a long time ago. But, the jokes are about pedophilia and rape, among other things. And he says they were stupid, not at all funny, wildly insensitive, and certainly not provocative like I had hoped. And they don't reflect the person I am today or have been for some time. And he was saying this about the same time that the cast members of Guardians of the Galaxy were released an open letter calling for his reinstatement.
Yeah, and I think it's, there's an interesting case there too, is that, I saw a lot of fans of James Gunn saying, oh, so Disney, what are we going to do about all your racist caricatures in the history of your animation, whether it's the Native American depictions in Peter Pan or the crows in Dumbo, or Disney is not immune to a history of problematic media, right? And so the question is, can people in media change? Can there be a reckoning for someone who has done something wrong? And I think he didn't defend himself at all. He right away said, "I accept this consequence. You know, this is these were terrible things. I should never have said them." But at some point, I think we have to recognize that people have to be able to change and improve.
Oh, definitely. When I teach the communication across cultures class in our communication department, I always tell students that what we say in class, if I see you like 3 years ago, I'm not going to hold you to that same statement, because hopefully throughout college, your ideas and your opinions do change. So I really feel that we do have that, should have a bit of empathy and forgiveness towards people developing their awareness, or like their own awareness of themselves and other people.
Yeah, particularly if they've stopped doing it. But
yeah.
We haven't quite decided it as a society. It seems like what that line is yet. Mm-hmm. Why don't we spend the last 2.5 minutes or so on your pick threes, your media choices for the month. Precious?
So mine are a mix. I am picking Smite. It's an online game. And mm-hmm. the reason why I picked it was because I went to the headquarters where they make Smite in Alpharetta, Georgia, which is this area that's this kind of techie developing
area. Right?
Yeah, outside of Atlanta. And it's created by Skillshot. And so if you're into a different type of historical gods, whether it's from like Greek mythology or Egyptian, it's like a game that incorporates all of them. Mm-hmm. Also, I'm reading the book Not That Kind of Girl by Lena Dunham. It's really funny and just a wonderful summer read. And then also been watching the television or the Netflix series Ugly Delicious by David Chang. Mm-hmm. It's a really wonderful food show, and I like how it represents Asians and Asian Americans as also critics of food, because a lot of times we rely on like a European point of view of what cuisine is, but also, I mean, food's been such a big part of Asian cultures too.
Ugly Delicious. Okay, mm-hmm. I can't wait to check that one out. Andrew, got about a minute.
All right. Well, first is an indie film that's out there, Sorry to Bother You, which was just nuts. I mean, I can't even describe. I was going to go see a movie, and I watched a couple different trailers, and like, oh, this looks interesting. It did not prepare me at all for what I saw, and I don't even want to say anything except that it's a must-see film. And then Luke Cage, season 2 on Netflix. If you're a Marvel fan, I actually didn't particularly care for season 1, but I thought season 2 was a lot of fun and ended on a great tribute to The Godfather. And then for those of you in the Ashland area, this weekend is the SOU Creativity Conference.
Yes,
Precious and I are going to be doing a panel on VR tomorrow at 1 p.m. So you can check it all out at SOUCreativityConference.com.
We've had Dan Denai and Ron Baghetto on already mm-hmm. to talk about the Creativity Conference. So looking forward to that. Ought to be a lot of fun. Always great to talk to you guys about media stuff. I wish we had about 3 hours to do it, but we do pretty well for our 22 minutes. Mm-hmm. Andrew Gay and Precious Yamaguchi on the communication faculty at Southern Oregon University. Join us once a month for Signals and Noise. See you guys in a month.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you.